Well, if you like talking about creatures and Bigfoot, you're going to love the next couple hours here on Coast to Coast AM. Jeff Hilling, our guest, as we talk about his work, The Great Bigfoot Film Mystery. And if you get a moment, go up to coasttocoastam.com. Take a look, if you would, at the Patterson film that we've got there for you. And also go to our Facebook. Those of you who aren't following us, you can do so by going to coasttocoastam.com. Lex is going to post a little poll up there, and we want you to participate through our Facebook link, okay? So you just do that, and I'll be back with Jeff Hilling in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Jeff Hilling, expert on the Patterson film, The History of Bigfoot. He is the author of this exciting book, The Great Bigfoot Film Mystery. Now, it's a thought-provoking publication exploring the deeper mysteries of this piece of Bigfoot cinema known as the Patterson film, and he's also the creator of a website which is linked up at coasttocoastam.com, pattersonfilm.com it is, and welcome to Coast to Coast. Here is Jeff Hilling back. Jeff, good to have you back again. How are you?
Great. It's great to be back on your fine show, George.
Yeah, this is a great time of year. You know, I love these Bigfoot mysteries, and you've done just a stunning job on this Patterson film. Tell me your interest in it. How did you get involved in it?
Well, to tell you the truth, when I was younger, I saw In Search Of, and my mother also supplemented my reading supply with supermarket tabloids, such as Weekly World News, Inquirer, The Sun, The Star, things like that. And it developed over time. Now, when I was young, I watched In Search Of the movie Boggy Creek.
Oh, yes.
And these things entered the mind of a lot of people back then and piqued the interest. And this all stemmed from the Patterson film. The Patterson film really launched Bigfoot. If there was no Patterson film, we would not have the interest in Bigfoot we see even today, which is coming back. Patterson film launched a subculture, a pop culture, if you will, of Bigfoot. And much like most people of that era, we grew up with Bigfoot. We saw Bigfoot in the tabloids. We saw Bigfoot on TV. And that's kind of what stemmed it for me. Now, I haven't been following Bigfoot my entire life, but recently, the past 10 years, I really started getting into the Patterson film mystery. Started reading every publication, everything I could find on the topic.
Let's go back a little bit, Jeff. Just tell us, who was Roger Patterson and Bob Gimlin?
Well, Roger Patterson basically was a rodeo rider. He made his living doing rodeo work, farm work, things like that. But more importantly, who he was the man who filmed the 1967 piece of Bigfoot footage.
And Gimlin?
And Bob Gimlin was his friend, basically. Bob Gimlin was an interesting character, too. And they went on expeditions together throughout the upper Northwest, Canada, and California. They've done several expeditions. Now, Roger Patterson was in the midst of filming a documentary of Bigfoot based upon a book he wrote in 1966 called Do Abominable Snowmen of America Really Exist?
Okay, so he went out there on that day in October, Jeffrey, he went out there to do a documentary on Bigfoot, right?
Yes, he did. He sought out to find a Bigfoot. He wanted to film a Bigfoot. He wrote a book about Bigfoot, and what he was trying to do was basically film a documentary to support his book and his works about this creature that he believed existed.
Okay. All right, so paint us a picture. They're out there trying to film a documentary on Bigfoot. They're out there trying to find Bigfoot. What's going on?
Well, what we see in the film is he films several reels ahead of time before the classic footage that we see. We see pretty mundane footage beforehand. We see film of the mountains, the trees, the forest land, him on a horseback.
And what drove him to this area, Jeff?
There were previous sightings there, alleged footprints from a logging site, and there was also he had been on other expeditions as well. So this wasn't the only expedition Patterson had been on. So he was out there checking it out. He was out there trying to capture something on film, and he just happened to hit a home run, as far as we know, about this film. This film captures an unknown creature, from what we know. Either that, or he did the greatest illusion known to mankind ever.
Without special effects.
Without special effects. In that day and age, with analog 16mm film, there were no special effects. You could not have falsified what we see in that film. In this day and age, we don't even know what's real. We don't know what's real when we see an image. It could be digitally altered.
Right.
It could be digitally manipulated. It could be work of special effects teams. It could be work of computer programs.
Oh, you need experts now, and even they have a difficult time.
They do. We're in the age, George, where we don't even know what's real when we see images, and that's kind of scary.
Yep. No, I agree with it. Well, what do you find, Jeff, so intriguing about the Patterson film?
What I find so intriguing about this film is that it has been subject to scrutiny for over 40 years. It has been analyzed, digitized over and over again. And every single decade since its inception, this film has been analyzed in a different way. Recently we've gotten stabilization from it. Bill Munns has done an excellent job recently on stabilizing this film. And we see the motion, the gait of this creature. And it is amazing. It is something that has actually been proven throughout time to be more amazing than when we first saw it. Every decade that goes by, it gets subjected to a new science, a new technology, and yet it is still stood up to criticism, which is quite amazing.
It's a female, isn't it?
As far as we know, yeah. We see breasts on this thing. They're pendulous breasts. They're moving. Now, if this was costumery, this was something even beyond we can perform today. In fact, in today's day and age in technology, when we watch Hollywood movies, things of such, most of the technology has been geared towards animation at this point. We're really getting away from costumery in Hollywood.
Right.
We're getting into
animation.
Digital age where everything is computer generated. When you go watch a Spider-Man movie, Incredible Hulk movie, or any kind of monster movie, what we're seeing nowadays is not costumery. We are seeing digital manipulation of images or just pure computer animation.
Let's look at some of the negativity about the film. Let's have you address it as well. Some critics of this film say that it's merely a man in a monkey suit. How do we know it was not?
Well, I'm not saying 100% that it couldn't be. It certainly could have been. But if it was, it was I call it the magical monkey suit, much like the Zapruder film has the magic bullet theory. This is the magic monkey suit theory. But I honestly don't understand how it could have been a monkey suit, because the critics just like to dismiss it as a monkey suit because it's a very convenient way of dismissing this film. Just say, hey, that's a guy in a monkey suit. That's a guy in a gorilla suit. Well, people who say that have really not understood this film. They've really not analyzed it very deeply. They've really not seen the details that have been come forth in the past four decades. The muscle movement, the breast movement in this creature. We see details as far as the length of the arm is one thing I find very, very peculiar. When I look at the measurements in this film, I see the length in the arm primarily from the elbow to the shoulder, as opposed from the elbow to the tip of the finger. Mm-hmm. Now, when you're going to, let's say you're going to fake a Bigfoot film, or you're going to fake a costume, or you're doing something for a play, a skit, or for Hollywood, if you wanted to lengthen the arms on a costume of a creature, the way you do it is you extend it at the glove level. You do it from the, you basically add extension to your hands. But when you do that, and you bend the elbow, it's obvious that you've added length, because it's coming from the elbow to the tip of the finger. What we see in the Patterson film, if you look very closely, you're going to notice a lot of the length stems from the elbow to the shoulder, which is impossible to replicate. You cannot do that. No matter how you think of it, you cannot replicate that length in a costume. It can't be done.
Has anybody come forward, anybody since 1967, and said they made that costume? Because I know a few years ago in the Carolinas, when those two guys had that creation, we talked to the costume designer. But in this case, has anybody come forward and said, we made this?
Well, there have been people who have claimed to be the person in the suit, and there have been people who have claimed to have made the costume. And there have been people who have been accused of making the costume. There's a lot of confusion about this, a lot of rumor, a lot of innuendo, a lot of urban legend of the costumery that may have been involved if this was a costume. One of the people was Philip Morris from the Philip Morris Costume Company. They make good suits. But these are, we're talking about Halloween costumes is basically what they make. Or possibly B-grade movies back in the 50s or 60s, they'd make gorilla suits of that caliber. You can go on their website and check out their stuff. It's nothing that would fool anybody. I don't even think it would fool a small child, if you will, if you have a person in the suits. And that's one of the people who claims to have made the suit is Philip Morris. Recent book by Greg Long came out and discussed that there was a man in the suit, Bob Hieronymus, and then there was also Philip Morris, who claimed to have made these costumes. And that is just simply inconceivable. Back in the 60s, there was only a couple costume makers, and they were gorilla suits. There was no such thing as a Bigfoot costume.
Right, right.
And if you go online today and look up gorilla suits, or even look up Bigfoot costumes, find one for a couple $1,000, if you will, and let me know if you could possibly think that these things could be a real Bigfoot or what we see in the Patterson film. Would it pass muster? I don't think it would. There's nothing that even comes close back then. The only thing we have to really compare it to are Hollywood movies back in 1967, 68, late 60s. What was coming out around that time? Well, we have Planet of the Apes, and we have Stanley Kubrick's magnum opus, 2001: A Space Odyssey. At the beginning, they have these testy troglodytes tromping around in raising heck,
yeah,
and under this monolith. And what we see are these Hollywood creations of Bigfoot-type, gorilla-type creatures in both these films. These were the best that Hollywood had to offer at the time. And they look nothing like the creature we see in the Patterson film. The Stanley Kubrick film, they looked like gorillas, and they were mimicking the movement of gorillas, basically, or troglodytes is what they were supposed to be. And in Planet of the Apes was more focused on the mask, the body type that we see in Planet of the Apes was very human-like, and it wasn't supposed to be anything but human-like. It wasn't trying to look like something in the Patterson film. So the costumes we have available from Hollywood and from your average consumer grade that you could pick up at a costume shop resemble nothing like what we see in the Patterson film, even if it were modified.
A couple recent books about the Patterson Take a poke at him. You know, they said he was a con man. He never paid his bills. He was a liar. Pretty serious accusations, I think, Jeff. What's your take?
You know, accusations like that, I looked into every single one of them, and I came to the conclusion that they might be true. all these, let's just assume that he was the worst human being, the worst sinner on earth. He never paid his bills. He defrauded people. Let's assume he was an awful man. How does that explain what we see in the images of the Patterson film? That has nothing to do with it. Is it possible that a bad person, even if he were bad, could capture something like the creature we see on the Patterson film and have it be legit? It has nothing to do. One has nothing to do with the other.
Did he ever try to? Well, did he ever try? Did he ever try to benefit financially from all of this?
Well, he did. He set up shows and tours of his film. He would go around. It was a very grassroots project. A lot of people think that the Patterson film back then was just took off like wildfire. It really didn't. It was rejected by scientists, anthropologists at the time, and Patterson shopped it around, basically, tried to get some interest in it. It had very little interest at the time. He got a few newspaper articles, but what he did is he went to high school gyms. He went to junior high school auditoriums, and he set up shows for $1.50 a piece. You could go and see the Patterson film. How cool would that have been back then?
Well, there are two issues here. One is, of course, the belief in Bigfoot, and I think there is a creature out there. Too many people have reported seeing these creatures. I mean, so to me, it's something. I don't know if it's an ape-like creature, if it's the missing link. I don't know what it is, but I'm pretty sure that there's some kind of physical creature out there. Then, of course, the second issue is the Patterson film. Was it a hoax? Was it real? That I don't know. You've looked into it. What makes you believe that it's an authentic film?
I'm about 80% convinced that it is. Now, I'm a healthy skeptic. I'm looking at this from a different approach. I'm not one of those people who's buying into everything Bigfoot, and I'm not a person who dismisses everything Bigfoot either. I'm an outsider, actually, in the Bigfoot world. I don't belong to any of these camps, any of these people who get together and hang out and call themselves Bigfooters or things like that. I'm not against that, but I'm not one of them. I'm an outsider. I'm an investigator. I look at things logically. And this film has withstood so much scrutiny. And what I use in my book is I use this analogy of a $20 bill. Let's say you have a bogus $20 bill or a real one. Let's say you have a $20 bill you just got passed to. You don't know if it's real or fake. But if you want to know, what you do is you put it under a microscope. You start analyzing it. You start scrutinizing it. And as soon as you do, you start looking at it closer. It's either going to be proven authentic or it's going to fall apart really quick once it's under the microscope. The Patterson film has been under the proverbial microscope for over 40 years. It's been analyzed, digitized over and over again in different levels throughout the decades. It's been stabilized recently in an amazing way. And we should see it fall apart under its own weight. We should see the details once we start getting a better look at it. It should become apparent that this thing is a hoax. But actually the opposite has occurred. It's actually been more amazing. We've seen more amazing details. The more it's
well, hold on for a second here, Jeff. We're going to talk more about the Patterson film, and then next hour, of course, we'll take phone calls with you on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, we'll take your phone calls. Maybe you have a Bigfoot story or you want to react to the Patterson film. Tell us what you think about it with our guest, Jeff Hilling, his book, The Great Bigfoot Film Mystery. And when we come back, more questions for him on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. We're with Jeff Hilling. Jeff, how was your Thanksgiving?
It was wonderful. I spent it with family. How was yours, George?
Super. Same thing. I had a whole bunch of people over to the house before the show. Then I had to tell them, hey, I got to get off to work. I got to get going. So they were all very good about that. But the great part about it was it's just fun to be able to share experiences with people who don't have a place to go, Jeff. And then my two daughters just did a great job cleaning up afterwards, which I hate to do. You know, cooking is fun. Cleaning up is not fun.
Never.
Not at all. Not at all. We had a chance to talk about tonight. They wanted to know what was on the show. And, you know, I told them I was talking about Bigfoot later on in the program. And, you know, the topic gets everybody's eyebrows to pop up, doesn't it? It just, it's something that people like to talk about.
It's an amazing phenomenon, Bigfoot is. It stems back for actually over 150 years. We have, and it goes beyond that, but just from the newsprint, we have records from the Indians and people in accounts seeing mysterious hairy men in the woods, wild men. You know, some of these things obviously aren't Bigfoot. I'm not going to buy into every single story I hear, but this Bigfoot phenomenon goes back longer, way, way beyond the Patterson film.
Well, you know, I got interested when I was a kid reading up on the Abominable Snowman. I mean, that fascinated me. And I got to believe that the creatures are pretty similar, aren't they?
Yeah. And, you know, Sir Edmund Hillary went out to try to discover in the Himalayas, you know, what was that, back in the 50s, the Abominable Snowman. Now, that turned out to be a bust. At first he thought he had a Yeti skelp. Some of the people there had thought they had one, but it turned out to be like the butt of a yak or something like that. It was a modified creation that he discovered was a hoax, and he never found it. But it was a very interesting expedition, and it was based upon foot tracks. And it's not saying that the Yeti isn't real. It's just what he came up with wasn't.
If science had a chance to truly investigate this Patterson film, and I don't believe they've done that yet, what do you think some of the conclusions might be?
Well, one thing we have to realize is science isn't all that it's cracked up to be. Science can only do so much. I think we as human beings put too much stock in what we call science. We think science can solve everything. Well, you can't replicate history. You can't figure out things in a test tube that happened on film. We can analyze this thing in a somewhat scientific way, but we're dealing with evidence. We're dealing with history. We're dealing with a film, a very enigmatic film. There's nothing like this film under the sun. And I would like to say that there never will be, because what Roger Patterson filmed was on 16-millimeter film, and that makes all the difference in the world.
Was it 16 or 8?
It was 16-millimeter.
16. All right. Well, that's good. That's pretty good quality.
Yeah, and that's why we can have blow-ups. You know, people like M.K. Davis have blown up, like, the frame 352 from the Patterson film to life size because of the quality of 16-millimeter film. And that's one of the problems when you're seeing footage nowadays on YouTube and new Bigfoot footage, is that it's being filmed on camera phones.
Oh, yeah. I mean, technology. Eventually we're going to get some more Bigfoot video. Eventually.
Well, we get Bigfoot footage. We get Bigfoot film. But the problem is we can't analyze it any longer. What Patterson filmed it on was 16-millimeter film, which is a very, very high-quality format. People, especially younger people, really don't realize how good this format was, because you can blow it up to life size. Yeah, it's grainy to a certain degree, but if you blow up a digital camera, digital camcorder, even high-quality ones in this day and age, they start losing resolution rapidly. And that's why when you see new Bigfoot footage, nobody's interested in it. They're interested in it to a certain degree, but once they start to blow it up, they realize, you know what? I can't see much more than what the original film is.
Right.
Because it can't be analyzed much more.
In this
day and age, people aren't out looking for Bigfoot with 16-millimeter footage. That stuff's pretty obsolete.
Everything's video now.
Yeah, it's all, you know, even videotape we don't use, which wasn't that good either, but
right. It's all digital. Well, what do you think of this Siberian expedition where some scientists went out there and they claim that they've got some possible DNA?
Well, only time will tell. There's been a lot of DNA evidence. People find little hairs here and there that they claim they find hairs, and they send it in to get analyzed. And sometimes the analyst is inconclusive, or they say that it's human, or they possibly say it's of an ape ancestry. But we don't know where these hair samples were obtained. So we have to be somewhat critical when we hear about any Bigfoot evidence. We need to look at the facts. We need to look at them soberly. In other words, we can't buy into every single claim. Yet we can't be too skeptical to say that this can exist. We just have to look at the facts. We have to look at things logically. And a lot of these DNA evidences are inconclusive or of unknown origin. There have been a few that have been unknown, and those are very interesting. But a lot of them have come up as human. In other words, somebody put their own hair in there. Maybe they shaved their hair on their back. I don't know. Or possibly they collected samples from the zoo. You know, maybe a zookeeper grabbed some gorilla hair and said, well, here's some gorilla hair.
Could you be an impartial judge if you were looking at the authenticity of the Patterson film?
That is actually how I go about my research. I'm one of the rare researchers that actually come at this as, you know what, I don't care if the evidence lies on a hoax, and I don't care if this is a real Bigfoot. I mean, I care. I would love it to be a Bigfoot, but if it's not, you know, let the truth fall where it may. Let's look at the evidence. There's a lot of people out there that want to make this work as a Bigfoot, or they see a piece of footage and they want it to be Bigfoot. So they'll do anything they possibly can. And I think a lot of times they self-delude themselves into believing it's the Bigfoot. Whereas I look at the Patterson film, I see a fascination actually in both ways. I see a fascination if this is a Bigfoot, obviously, but I also see an incredible fascination with this film if it's a hoax. And I explain that a little more in my book, that if this is a hoax, this actually is more amazing than if it were a Bigfoot. Because if this were a Bigfoot, you're getting what you get. You understand you're getting a Bigfoot. But if it's a hoax, we're dealing with something on a level that is unexplainable and almost borderline paranormal.
Well, you know, you're right. Most people, I think, want to believe, and, you know, sometimes their minds will play tricks. But if you can take a pretty tough scientific approach to it, or methodical approach, I think you'll start getting some great information. Let's talk about the book now, The Great Bigfoot Film Mystery. Tell me how you unravel this.
Well, I try to look at the film and just give people a rundown of what the film's all about. Some of the controversies that have gone on since the film's inception. And I also look at the arguments. There have been a couple books recently, actually, that have been written trying to debunk the Patterson film. And a lot of these things are based upon hearsay. They're based upon character assassinations, or people saying that Roger Patterson wasn't an upstanding citizen or he owed people money. But the problem is none of these debunking books are really dealing with the heart of the matter. And what is the heart of the matter? The heart of the matter is the film itself. We can look at all these side issues. We can look at, well, this story wasn't here, or they were here on this date, or so-and-so said that the film didn't get developed till 3 days later. None of this deals with the images we are seeing in the film, though.
Do they bring up anything compelling at all, Jeff? I mean, those who are skeptics, do they see anything that at least seems to be worthwhile?
I've looked at all the arguments. I've looked at their reasoning. And some of it is compelling to a certain degree. But it's all hearsay. There is nothing really solid that I've seen that affects how we view the Patterson film. You know, let's assume Patterson was the worst person on earth. Let's say he was a con man. It still doesn't explain what we see in the film. You can be a con man, but if you're performing an illusion like this, there's no explanation for that. It doesn't matter if you're a con man, a crook, or a saint. what we're seeing in the film is the heart of the matter. When people start getting into these side issues, they're avoiding the real film. They're avoiding the real heart of the matter. The heart of the matter is the film.
Well, tell me, what do you see in the film, in your opinion, that is the most convincing, which would tell you that this is real?
Well, one is the arm length from the elbow to the shoulder. Another main issue is when we start analyzing this film, we start seeing muscle movement. We start seeing ripples in the muscle as this creature moves. We start seeing pendulous breaths as this creature moves. Now, Roger Patterson could not have foreseen, he could not have looked down the corridor of time and understood what his film that he was making was going to be subjected to. There's no way in heck that could have happened. Nobody had an idea of what kind of technology was coming along. Nobody had, this is the second most analyzed film in history, second to the Zapruder film. This film is so amazing that people, you know, he could not have understood what this film was going to be subjected to. And this film was shot in one take only. That's another thing people don't understand, particularly younger people. You know, we live in the age of, videotape and now digital technology, where you can film things endlessly. You can film 1,000 takes if you're going to try to hoax a film nowadays until you get it right. And you can look through the viewfinder and say, yeah, this is it. Now, back then, you had to shoot a film, and then you had to get it developed. Mm-hmm. And this stuff was quite costly back then. Pricey film, pricey processing fees. And there's no way you could do this in one take and get that kind of results with one take.
What does the family of Roger Patterson say?
They still hold and maintain that this is the genuine, real deal. They have never backed off of their claim of this being the real deal. Neither has Bob Gimlin. Now, some people say Roger Patterson, I thought he, on his deathbed, confessed that this was a hoax. No, this was not a hoax. He never confessed it. A lot of times people are confessing the Loch Ness Monster footage, the picture, the famous picture, we saw that. The photographer of that piece of footage did confess on their deathbed that was a trick of photography. And a lot of times the two get mixed up.
Well, will we ever find out?
I don't know. I mean, if the family confesses or Bob Gimlin leaves us some more information someday, but he maintains a pretty credible piece of testimony. He has never wavered from his testimony. So unless somebody comes up with a suit that, this magical suit that performs all these magical muscle movements, which we still can't replicate to this day. You know, we've tried recreations over and over again. There have been several, and they've all failed. Even the modern ones where they're using modern techniques, modern materials have all come short of the Patterson film, which was filmed in 1967, not 2011.
Were they scared at all? Did they ever say anything about that?
Was who scared?
Patterson and Gimlin.
Of the creature?
Yeah.
Yeah, they claim in their testimony in old interviews that you read, Argosy magazine and some of the older newspaper interviews they've done, articles, they were afraid of what they saw. This creature was big, according to them, and even according to a lot of people's estimates in the film. This is a very scary beast. Now, they did have rifles with them, and they were willing to use them, according to their own testimony. And in a sense, if this were a real creature, I wish they would have, because we wouldn't be having this discussion today. We know what this thing was.
Of course, I'm glad nobody has shot one of these things yet.
No.
They don't seem to be violent toward a human, do they?
But we would know what it is. I guess in a sense, there wouldn't be a mystery. We'd have the creature. So it depends what you want. Do you want the mystery or do you want the creature?
Well, that's a good question. I think I'd rather have the mystery than a dead creature.
It is a fascinating mystery.
Yeah, it truly is. Where do you get your book?
You can get it at my website directly. Right now, I'm working on distribution, but I'm fine with it being an underground book at this point. It's PattersonFilm.com. You can order the book directly and pay it through however you want. Check, credit card, PayPal. That's how it works.
It's a good read. I like the cover. Who did your graphics? It's
Bruce
a depiction.
Horton. Okay. Bruce Horton's the artist. He's phenomenal. He does a lot of science fiction work, and he said he liked my book. He said, yeah, go ahead, use my art. He was good with it, and I said, you know, this is the best painting of the Patterson creature I've ever seen because it's not all science fictioned up. It's not all muscular. It's an actual representation, and it reminds me of the old Night Gallery paintings. Remember that show, George?
Yep, with Rod Serling. Sure,
yeah,
absolutely.
That was a great show, and the paintings in it always fascinated me, and that's what struck me about his artwork is that it reminded me of the Night Gallery. So I said, you know what, you got the cover, and he agreed to it.
Does the film get much play anymore?
Oh, yeah. The Patterson film is as hot as it ever was. Bigfoot is as hot as it ever was. The subject. We see so much nowadays in the documentaries on Bigfoot. It's unreal. But unfortunately, I think the documentaries are getting worse. I think a lot of the stuff we're seeing on Bigfoot is more sensationalistic than it is realistic. It's
yeah.
not really trying to get to the bottom of the truth as much as it is trying to entertain people and keep ratings, basically, for their channel.
Jeff, what do you think this creature is?
You know, I honestly don't know. What is it? Is it a animal? Is it a wild man? Or is it just a Bigfoot?
Some people say it's extraterrestrial, it's dimensional.
Yeah, I've been on a lot of interviews, and there have been people who host, particularly in the paranormal world, who believe that. I don't believe that. I think when they start getting into that, what they're doing is they're trying to answer a riddle with another riddle. And that doesn't make much sense. It just puts the problem out there even further. This is a real physical being, whatever it is. It could be a hoax, yeah. I don't discount that. But it's an amazing hoax if it was. Is it an animal? Possibly, yeah. It's not an ape. Some people think it's an ape. When you look at an ape, you look at the feet, they're completely different. You look at the hands, they're very different than what we see in the creature.
Gimlin's still alive. Patterson's dead, right?
Yes.
Why can't we get Gimlin to take a lie detector test?
You know, I don't know. Maybe somebody should press him on that.
I would. If something like that happened, if I was abducted by a UFO or if I saw little aliens running around or someone said Bigfoot was out there, and if somebody was going to pay for it, like this show, I would take it. I would take it. If I was telling the truth, I would take it. And, and some people who don't tell the truth still take it, Jeff. They fail it, and then they come up with excuses why they failed it. But, I mean, I would take it. Jeff, we're gonna take some phone calls with you, some Bigfoot stories and questions when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM.